Hey, I'm Jim. I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
21 years. That is so cool. I'm glad I was here to see that. I'm coming up on 2 years in January. My sobriety date is January 26th. I was kind of going through my notes in the big book, trying to figure out what I was going to talk about in 10 minutes, because my story's about this big, and I had about that much. And I was looking at the lines that meant something to me, and the quote, perhaps he came to scoff, and he may remain to pray, jumped out to me because that was my experience in AA. I definitely came to scoff and remained to pray. I came to AA having been unceremoniously kicked out of my house, came home from work to find my bags packed, the garage door disabled, the locks changed, not working, changed. And that was, for me, my bottom. I mean, everything that I had worked for, everything that I that meant anything to me was in that house. My wife, my two girls who were 2 and 4 at the time, my home, my security. I mean, everything that I knew was in that house, and I couldn't get in. And I had no tools at that point. I refused to believe it was me. I refused to believe it was alcohol. And the only tool I knew at that point was manipulation and lying. And so I picked up the phone to call my wife to let me in, because I was going to lie my way back in that house. I was going to manipulate my way back in that house, and to her credit, she didn't answer the phone, which pissed me off. And I had nothing to do. I had no tools. I had nowhere to go, and I had to reassess at that point. And so I did. Backing up for a second, I'm 40 now. I started drinking when I was 13 in earnest. I mean, I really took a liking to it. There was always booze around my house. Back then, I can remember the first time I ever had a beer. I never drank normally. I never drank a beer and then stopped. I drank to get drunk. I mean, when I drank, it was game on. And, that started early. I thought that it gave me liquid courage. You know, I thought it made me the life of the party. Sort of made me the ass of the party. But, back in that time, I didn't know the difference. High school, went to college, went to grad school, and the patterns never changed. Thursday, Friday, Saturday was just game on. And then I drank to excess, drank to pass out, and then I would just get up and start the cycle all over again. I never had those moments where I really got caught. I didn't get DUIs, mostly because the schools I was at, we walked to bars. There was no other reason. I had what I call those shower moments, like the next day in the shower, kind of washing my hair and going, did I say that? Did I do that? How did I do that? Why did I do that? How did I get in that situation? And it was over and over and over again. Just the complete definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. And I would literally hate taking showers, because that's when it would hit me, and that's when the night before it would be like I'd washing off that stink, and that's when the night before would hit me, and I'd just think, God, how did I do that? How did I get myself in that situation? After grad school, I got married. Well, not right after, but once I got married, booze, beer turned to hard liquor, not because I had gotten any more sophisticated, but because it was easier to hide. Beer bottles and beer cans tend to stack up. Glasses of vodka just tend to flow. And so I switched to booze, and really that kind of became my drug of choice. Drinking went from fun to necessity. People talk about their triggers. They talk about work, stress, people. My trigger was 5 o'clock. At 5 o'clock, I was drinking, and that was my trigger. When I saw, I'd be working at 4, and I'd be like, if I leave now, I could get there at 4:45, and then I could start drinking at 5. That was my trigger. If my kids had soccer practice, I went with a vodka tonic and a plastic cup and thought no one knew. If my kids needed a bath, I did it with a glass of wine and hurried them to bed so I could keep drinking. So 5 o'clock was my go time. I was truly what that book calls the restless, irritable, and discontent drunk. And that was me. If I wasn't drinking, I was restless. If I was trying to figure out how I was going to drink, I was restless. Once I started to drink, it might have been okay at the start, but then I could feel people monitoring me and watching me, and how much is he drinking, and did he drink that? And then I got irritable. And then I isolated, because I didn't want to be around you if you were going to be a buzzkill. How many times did I say that? Yeah. And my wife's laughing, because I'd be like, what? Why you gotta be such a buzzkill? I'm so much fun when I'm drunk. I turned into a liar, a cheater, and a stealer. I mean, that's what I was. My life was about lying and cheating and stealing. I didn't want to tell you where I was, where I was going, what I was doing. I just did not want you to know that stuff. Because the less people that knew that stuff, the less people were gonna nag me. and less people are going to tell me not to drink and to get on the right path. It culminated in me getting kicked out of the house, and I mean, the story to get there is this big. In the time that I'll tell you, I can sum it up really like this. When I was drinking, and I know I've said this when I was drinking, I would have told you that I was a great husband, and I would have told you that I was a great father, because I was there. I mean, while my kids were taking a bath, I was there. I was drinking, I was hurrying them off to bed, but I was there. And in my mind, that made me a great husband, and it made me a great father. But I was never present. You know, I was never emotionally there. I was never open to talking. I was never open to listening. I never asked my kids, how was your day? I didn't ask my wife, how was your day? I was there, and that made me great in my mind. But I never was present. And all that stuff culminated into me getting kicked out and me being evicted is what I was. I wasn't kicked out. I was evicted. And so I got to AA. You know, some people talk about being there on the court card. I got there on the wife card. And and I was determined to get my family and my wife back. That's why I came to AA. I didn't go to AA to stop drinking. I sat in a Thursday night newcomer meeting in Mira Mesa with my arms like this. And I looked on the board and I saw God and all the steps. And I said, this is a cult. This is a religion. I looked behind me and I saw these little signs that said, one day at a time and keep it simple. And I thought, what's wrong with you people? I said, you're not going to get me. You don't understand me. I got real issues. You know, this guy who's been drinking off and on, I didn't even want to listen to him. And I sat there and in my mind, I played it out and I said, I will stay here for 30 to 45 days. I will get my AA cred. I will get my way back into my house and I will start drinking again. I mean, that was my plan. It was a great plan. And it probably would have worked had I not sat in that room and started to listen. And really one of the first things that happened to me that changed my program was that someone pulled me aside and said, you know, be careful what you wish for. Be careful what you wish for, because you could get that family back. And if you get that family back and you go back to being the same asshole, excuse me, that you were, you're going to be kicked out of your house again. You're going to be evicted again. So, you know, he called me on it. He said, you're the kind of guy I see come through these rooms that gets their family back, and 30 days later is drinking again. And that pissed me off because at that point I didn't think of myself as a quitter and I didn't think of myself as a fake, even though that I was. And he called me on it and I appreciated that. And really, I realized I was doing my program for someone else. I was doing my program for my wife and my kids, but I wasn't doing it for Jim. So at that point I really became open to change. And for me, I sat in the same spot in that same meeting and I looked at that traditions and I saw that the only requirement for membership was a desire to stop drinking, and I latched on to that because I didn't think about I thought about constantly, how am I going to make this? How am I going to do 21 years? And I would get over it, and I would get so inside my brain, and I just stopped, and I said, you know what? I have a desire to stop drinking, and that was it. That's all it took, and I sat there, and I started listening, and I started caring less about what you thought about me, and I started caring less about my exterior, and I just took in the message. I got a fantastic sponsor. I got into action. I started working the steps. And like it says, you know, I came to scoff, but I stayed to pray. And it sounds goofy to me. And if you know, now saying this, I never would have said this 2 years ago. I mean, the guy who said, the first time I ever met with my sponsor, he said, let's say a prayer and invite Jesus into this car. And I looked at him like, huh? Okay, if you want to. And he prayed, and I sat there the entire time thinking, boy, this is weird. But, you know, and that was the biggest issue for me, was the whole God issue, because I got to tell you, when I came into AA, I had so much hurt, so much shame, and so much embarrassment that the thought of having a relationship with God was beyond me. I mean, I always kind of envisioned God as like my grandfather who passed away a long time ago, and I thought, God, if my grandfather could see the shit that I'm doing right now, oh my God. So I wanted no relationship with God. I couldn't understand it. And I had no concept of a caring God. My concept of God was me saying to God, why have you done this to me? What's going on in my life? Why can't it get better? Why can't I have these material things? Because I was the victim. When I was a drunk, I was the victim. The world was against me. And it was you against me. The turning point came for me as in doing the second and third step with my sponsor. We were talking about turning our will over to God. I was still trying to figure out what God was, and I asked question after question after question. He kept saying, turn your will over to God. And I kept saying, what if I turn my will, and what if I do this, and how do I do that? And I don't remember the question I asked, but I asked a question, and bless his heart, he started to answer, and then he stopped me, and he said, do me a favor and ask that question again. And whatever question it was, I asked it again. He said, shut up and do what I tell you to do. And I was like, that's good. And you know, for me, that's exactly what I needed to hear. I will outthink this program any chance you give me. And I needed someone to tell me to shut up and do what I was told. I needed someone to say, there are a lot of people who blazed this trail. You don't need to go blazing your own trail. Here's how we're going to do it. You're going to turn your will over. And you don't need to have this God that you can draw on a piece of paper. And you know what? It worked for me. And I turned my will over. And the Serenity Prayer truly became my mantra. Every day that new things came my way, I just looked at it and I said, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. And there was a lot of things in my early days of sobriety that I couldn't change and that I needed to just turn over. And my family was the biggest one. The more I ran in a circle and the more I ran and said, look at me, look at what I'm doing, let me back in, I'm honest, I'm trustworthy, the more the walls went up. And I finally just said, God, it's yours. And if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. And if I get my family back, I get my family back. And if I don't, I can live with that. And that I just went down that path. And the crazy thing is that the more I stopped manipulating, the more I stopped trying, the more I just turned it over, the better things got. And, you know, the miracles happened. And you know, today, even still, at some meetings, we'll talk about this concept of God. And you know, obviously, if they're God as you understand him, I still cannot tell you my concept of God. I still cannot tell you what it is. Some people say, well, you can use a doorknob. Well, I've never bought into that, but I can't tell you. What I can tell you is that I binge drank for 27 years and tried for at least the last 20 of them to stop. And I'm 2 years now without drinking, and that obsession's been lifted. That's God working in my life. I can tell you that I go to a Sunday morning men's group with a lot of men that are like hardened working class men, and we sit around and tell stories and love each other. And, you know, that's God working its way in my life, that he's put people in my life that have shown me this path that I didn't know was possible. So I can't tell you my concept of God. I can tell you that I see the miracles every day, and that I thank God for him, and I know he's working in my life. The biggest gift, and I've gotten so many gifts out of AA, the biggest gift I've gotten out of AA is that relief from the bondage of self. I mean, I was the master manipulator, and I was the master of if I could control everything, that's how I wanted it to be. And today, probably for the first time in my life, I can actually look myself in the mirror, and I'm an honest person, and I'm an open book, and I don't worry what I've told you. I don't care that you know where I'm going, where I'm going to be. When my cell phone rings, I don't flinch. When my text goes off, I don't hide it. I just am an honest, open person, and that has been, quite frankly, if I got nothing out of this program, that would be it, because I live life on life's terms. And I'm no longer, as that book says, you know, the actor and the producer and the director. And that has taken this burden from me, an unbelievable burden from me. And, you know, I'm not perfect. I mean, I still have days where things come up and I start to pull it back in and I start to grab it and I take hold of it and I'm going to control this and I'm going to get them there and I get all wrapped up in my brain. The difference is today, well, 2 years ago, my reaction to that would have been to drink. I would have drank through the good times, the bad times, and the in-between times. And today, when I get wrapped up in those moments, I have tools. I've got my sponsor. I've got the big book. I've got God. I've got the guys in my Sunday group. I've got tools that I can rely on, and I can get out of that spin cycle, because I never could get out of that spin cycle 2 years ago. I could never figure out how to get out of that. I'll conclude with this. You know, to the newcomer, to the disillusioned, to the person who's maybe, you know, hasn't connected with their program in a while, if you have come to scoff, or maybe that's in the back of your mind, I would beg you to stay to pray. Because I can tell you from my own personal perspective that if you just simply have the desire to stop drinking, if you simply have the will to work the steps, and if you just embrace the program, the miracles can happen. And I'm standing in front of you as one of those miracles. I'm Jim. I'm an alcoholic.